Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Get behind the wheel of your new Opel at the Opel Open Road event now on at your Opel dealer.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
The clinical director of Cervical Check, Dr. Noreen Russell, appeared yesterday before the Oireachtas Health Committee and addressed a number of issues, including changes in the screening programme and the impact of COVID-19 on screening this year. And Dr. Noreen Russell joins me now. Good morning to you. You're very welcome.
Hi, Claire. Good morning.
Let's start with the committee hearing yesterday, and you outlined the impact that COVID-19 has had on cervical screening this year. It has been quite severe. Can you tell me about it?
How it's impacted screening is that we, after taking public health advice in March, we paused the cervical check screening programme from March until July. And what we're doing since we've restarted is we're managing capacity, because COVID-19 has affected capacity in every area of healthcare, and screening is no different. And what that means is we're trying to make sure that we have capacity in primary care, which is where our sample takers, our GPs and practice nurses work, to make sure we have capacity in the labs where the samples go and get processed, to make sure we have capacity in colposcopy clinics where women are referred onwards for further testing, and of course to make sure we have capacity in histology labs where the biopsies are sent to. So we've restarted in a kind of a phased way, but I'm delighted to report that by the end of this year we will have sent out 270,000 invitations. So all of the women who were due their screening test in 2020 will have received their invitation.
Okay, but you did say yesterday that it will be almost impossible, if not impossible, to catch up with what you've missed out on this year.
That's unfortunately true, Claire, because what catch up would mean is that suddenly we would be able to double up and do twice the work next year in a particular month. And that's just not an achievable goal.
And how concerned are you about the impact of that?
Well, the evidence would suggest that because cervical cancer is a slow growing cancer and it takes 10 to 15 years for precancer cells to develop into cancer, the evidence is that a 6 month pause or delay in screening doesn't have an impact for the vast majority of women. So, you know, I'm really keen that anyone out there who's due their screening test makes that appointment as soon. Any woman who's sitting at home who has her letter or who knows she's due, to make, you know, please do make your screening test appointment as soon as possible. I would always urge that. Similarly, I would urge if there's any woman out there listening to me today who has symptoms, you know, symptoms such as bleeding, vaginal bleeding in between periods, or bleeding after intercourse. These symptoms are worrying and you need to get to your GP and get investigated and possibly referred on, and don't wait for screening.
The test itself has changed because it's the HPV test now. Will you explain to us what that test is? You know, how is it harvested? Is it the same as the previous test?
So, Claire, this is a really, I suppose, a really good news story for the cervical screening check programme. In March of this year, we changed from being a cytology-based programme, which is based on smear tests, to a HPV-based programme. What that means for the woman, it's exactly the same. The test is taken in the same way by your GP or practice nurse, and it feels exactly the same. But what it means for the programme is that we will now detect 18 out of 20 abnormalities, where it used to be 15 out of 20. So on the kind of the broader scale of numbers, for every 1,000 women that we screen, 980 will have no abnormalities, there'll be nothing going on, they'll be fine. But we know in that 1,000 women, there are 20 who have precancer cells on their cervix. And what we know is that screening with cytology picks up 15 of those 20. And that's why we talk about screening will detect 75% of cancers. It won't detect 25%. But now that we've moved to HPV, our screening test will detect and prevent 90% of cancers. It still won't prevent every cancer, but it's a better test, and that's why we moved.
But it's different, and people have expressed concerns about it because it is different to what they might have experienced before.
Sure, and I think that's really, really shown us that there is an information gap. We had a media campaign ready to go in March, but with all of the health information that was out there about COVID-19, that media campaign was paused, and the women have very clearly shown us that they want more information, and that we have started putting that information out on campaigns, but we will be increasing that information for women, making it more, explaining more, having more videos, having more explanations. And that campaign is starting in the new year to explain why we have chosen this better test. And I suppose I see a lot of people worrying that we're not, you know, looking at cells, but we know that looking at cells is not as good as looking for HPV. HPV is actually a much better predictor of those women who are going to go on and have abnormalities and are at risk of developing cervical cancer.
Now, I'm sure you'll agree that your organisation's reputation is mixed at the moment. How do you? What's your assessment of that, and how are you addressing it?
Yeah, I think it's been a really, really tough couple of years in the programme. It's been tough because I think women's trust has been eroded. I think working in the programme and working on the front line has been really tough, because there's been a lot of anger and a lot of misinformation out there. What I would like to just say is screening works on a population level. So we know that from 2010 to 2015, there was a 7% decrease year on year for the number of women in Ireland who got cervical cancer. We know that screening prevents 75% of cervical cancer, our old programme, but didn't prevent 25%. What that means is that if you're in the 75%, you have a treatment, you have a Letts treatment, which removes some cells from your cervix, and you don't go on to get cancer, and you kind of forget about it, you move on with your life. But if you are one of those women who, despite doing everything right, you develop an interval cancer, so you've gone for your screening, you've done everything right, but you still get cancer, that's really, really tough. That's really, really hard. And we've heard a lot of those stories over the past couple of years. Claire, I'd love it. I'd love it if there was a screening test that could prevent all women from getting cervical cancer. There isn't. And that's the really, really hard thing. I think maybe in the past, what I would suggest, I think about this, the communications all the time. I think maybe we spoke too much about the benefits of screening and what screening could do and how it could prevent so many cancers. But perhaps we didn't talk enough about the reality that it won't prevent all. And that's been where a lot of the problems have lain.
So that would suggest that we overestimate what screening can achieve.
I think possibly we did. I think the programme has to take responsibility for that. We spoke so much about all of the cancers that were prevented and the huge numbers of women that attend every year. 6,500 women every year on the programme have a treatment for abnormal cells. So that's 6,500 women who don't go on to get cancer because that treatment removes mm-hmm. their risk. But we didn't talk about the fact that 160 women every year who participate in the programme will still go on to get cancer. And if you're in that 160, that's a really tough place to be.
But there are cases, aren't there, that have been through the courts where the women claim that their samples were misread and that this came to light in an audit, but the affected people weren't told about it. Now, in those circumstances, is it not to be expected that confidence would be at least dented?
And I guess that's where the issue of the retrospective audit wasn't, I think it would be fair to say that audit wasn't well thought out and well planned. And one of the key criticisms I would have about the audit is that it wasn't, first of all, the women and their doctors didn't know that the programme were auditing the interval cancers, but also the women and their doctors didn't know what the standard was. So what was the expected result of the audit? If you look at something, you need to be clear about what are you expecting the findings to be. We know from large audits in the United Kingdom, Public Health England have done an audit looking at 8,000 cancers. They look back on their cancers as well. And in those audits, they found that there was a 4 in 10 chance that on retrospective review, an abnormality would be detected that was not seen at the time of screening. So that's a normal finding in a screening programme.
So someone looking back at a sample, And this person who's looking back knows that this person has gone on to develop cancer, that they're seeing something that they might not have seen at first reading.
That's exactly it, Claire. And that's a really tough concept to get your head around, that looking back retrospectively, knowing that the woman has cancer is not the same as looking in real time as a screening test.
Mm-hmm. So but surely you would accept that there have been cases where slides have been misread.
So the again, I'm going to stay away from, it would be inappropriate for me to comment on individual cases, Claire.
Yeah, okay. I'm absolutely not asking you to do that. But
so what I'm going to I'm going to very much just stay to the facts, to the clinical facts of what screening can and cannot do. So what we have is we have the Public Health England report, which when they looked back, they found that 4 in 10 women who develop cancer, when you look back on their smears, you will find abnormalities in 4 out of 10 cases. When the RCOG came in, so international experts, and they audited the cervical check programme, they found that there were 30%, so 3 in 10 women who went on to get cancer, had an abnormality seen on retrospective review that was not detected at the time of screening. And their conclusion was that the Irish programme performs as well as any international programme can do. So what we have here is we have a cervical screening programme that is performing as well as any programme internationally. And this is where, and I'm going to answer your question now. So as a society, we have to decide, do we support screening or do we not? So being a supporter of screening has two arms. We have to support it, build confidence and trust, encourage women to attend, and celebrate the fact that HPV screening will prevent 90% of cancers.
But not all.
But we have to acknowledge that it will not prevent 10%. And we as a society have got to decide, how do we take that information and how do we care for those 10% of women who feel very, very hard done by? These are women who've attended for screening, they've done all the right things, they've gone for their tests, and the screening didn't work to prevent their cancer. And that's a societal decision. It's a really big one.
Mm-hmm. And are we, would you say, an outlier in Ireland when it comes to litigation on the back of screening when it doesn't work?
Claire, we are a complete outlier. The expert reference report that was published on interval cancer audit in October of this year pointed that out specifically. There was a survey done when the group were preparing that report. They sent out a survey to 17 other countries who'd have screening programmes. And of those 17 countries, 11 do this kind of review, these retrospective reviews for interval cancer. Only 3 go on to disclose those results, Public Health England being one of them. And across the board, there was no other screening programme that had any kind of a medical legal environment that was comparable to Ireland.
OK. So how do you feel then when you hear people describe what has happened since 2018 as the cervical check scandal?
I'll be honest, Claire, it's really hard. It's hard to be a clinician working in this area. I'm in this area because I'm really passionate about cervical screening. I remember what it was like when there wasn't a cervical screening programme. I remember so clearly, I remember being a junior doctor in 2001 in Cork. I remember a woman being admitted, a woman in her 40s with 4 children. I remember her being admitted because she was hemorrhaging. And in the middle of the night, I had to call the consultant to come to take her to theatre because she bled so heavily. And I remember so clearly being in that theatre that night and him saying, using the phrase palliative radiotherapy. I'd never heard it before. I'd never really thought about it before. I'd seen it in medical school, but I hadn't really thought about what it meant. And what he was telling me was, this woman has a cervical cancer that is not amenable to treatment. But what he said to me that night was, he said that he saw many, many women like this because there wasn't a screening programme. So this was a common occurrence for him. I was absolutely shocked because this was not common for me. That's when I can remember thinking, I want to be involved in cancer prevention. And that's what this programme does. It prevents the majority of cancers, but it doesn't prevent all.
And because of what we've just been talking about, it's been difficult to attract staff, hasn't it, to the cervical screening programme?
It's been really difficult, actually, yeah. Because what you're asking people to do is you're asking them to work with an imperfect tool, screening, knowing that they will never detect all cancers, but knowing that that is the standard that people expect. So you've got a complete mismatch here between expectation and reality. And it's really hard as a clinician when you are working as hard as you possibly can with the tools that are available to you and you know that you're doing good, but you're being judged as not being good enough.
So you took up this job in August at a very difficult time for cervical check, not least because of COVID and everything else that has happened since 2018. What are your ambitions for the service?
So, Claire, I've got three goals. The first is collaboration. We all want the same thing here. Doctors, their patients, we all want a screening programme that prevents as many cancers as is possible. And we need to work collaboratively. It feels sometimes like we're not collaborating over the last couple of years and that there's this suggestion that somebody somewhere wants to protect a programme that isn't working. That is simply not true. Everybody has the same goal here. We want a world-class cervical screening programme. My second goal is equity. It's really important to me that we have an equitable service. We know that 80% of eligible women partake in cervical screening, but I worry about the 20% that don't. Every year in Ireland, half of the women who are diagnosed with cervical cancer have never had a previous cervical smear. This is something I'm really passionate about. We need to reach out to these groups. We know who they are. We know that there are women who are marginalised because of socioeconomic reasons. Some women are afraid of the result. Some women have previous sexual trauma. Some women have language barriers. We know traveller women are less likely to partake in screening. Women with mental illness. And that's my goal. I want an equitable service which is accessible for all women because this is what will reduce their risk. And finally, transparency. I'm very straight. I'm very open. I am happy to discuss this issue with anyone who wants to discuss with me. There's no hidden agenda here. All I want is the best screening programme possible for the women of Ireland.
Dr. Noreen Russell, thank you for joining us on the programme.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.